You're listening to the Empty Stringers podcast, where every week we talk about locating, catching, and the conservation of redfish. My hope is to share with you what I'm seeing from the polling platform so that together we can catch more fish. Think of it as your weekly fishing report. Welcome back to the podcast, folks. I'm your host, Matt Parrish. Oh man, let's just dive into the life update before we get to talking about redfish. I am hopefully going to have my final inspections at that Baytown house next week. Well, I'll have electrical and plumbing. I had them. I failed both of them due to minor technicalities, just based off of not the code, but the certain city things that they're particular about. So not a big deal. Bunch of minor stuff. I've actually fixed all of it, but one, I'm waiting on a part to come in. So I should be done with all that on Monday and get some final inspections toward the middle of the week next week. And then I've got the building final, which I've only got two things I need to do that I know of that will get me across the finish line there. And then I'm going to be finishing the fence and putting a for sale sign in front of that house. So I'm looking forward to that. It has been a long time coming. In other news, the office that my home office, the one that I sit in right now as I'm recording this podcast to you, it got broken into on Monday night. Well, I guess it was Sunday night, early Monday morning. So I have security measures in place, but they didn't pertain to the office, which was stupid of me because anyone could just hop the fence, and that's what they did. I believe some teenage boys or young adult dudes jumped my back fence, got into my office. They took my really nice Benelli 28 gauge shotgun that I won at that Sabine hunting trip, took my Winchester 12 gauge, and took my laptop. Yeah. So, I was bummed to lose that stuff, but I was more the feeling of being violated. We were in the house asleep when this happened. And the feeling that you get from being violated like that, you don't soon forget. So Monday night, I beefed up the security, let's just say, around the place. And so at least I've got some deterrence in place, and we'll probably be able to ID anyone that does that again. So, yeah, it's just a big bummer. I made a police report, and there's nothing really else I can do other than just deter them from doing it again. They left a lot of stuff because they just couldn't carry all the stuff, I would imagine. I have speakers in here that hook to the computer. I have a computer and a shredder and microphones and stuff that I probably won't be keeping in here any longer. But they took it. So they took that stuff and left a lot of other stuff. So who knows? Maybe they'll try to come back. But I will be a lot more ready for them this time. And it's sad because I know they're probably young men who don't have dads in the home, who are below the poverty line, and they don't know any other way. And so I try to couple that with this feeling of being completely violated, trespassed on, you know, robbed of my stuff. But, you know, it is what it is. Anyhow, moving on to this past week of trips, I went out with Chris on Thursday and we scouted around, and I knew roughly where I expected the action to happen, and it happened close to there. In the first place, we went and found a school or two, not a ton of action, but a couple of schools, picked a fish off of that, and then ran to the different, to the next spot, and found some action there. And we caught, so school is in front of us. I throw out a hook of fish. The school ventures off away. It just happened perfectly to where the fish I hooked ran to the right, and the school continued to move off to the left. It's kind of peeled one off the edge. Chris does out, hooks one. We double up. He gets his reeled in the boat, unhooks him, lays him in the floor. The school is right by the boat. So he pitches out, hooks another. So with a triple, I guess. And that triple got a cool picture out of it, but, you know, let those fish go. I think Chris kept one fish, which we're about done. I've had a few friends come out and keep a fish or two here and there, but I'm about done with that for at least a little while. Not going to keep many fish over the summer. If you are coming fishing with me as a customer, I'm catch and release. So the only other thing is if you're a repeat customer and you want to keep a fish, let's talk about it beforehand, because I normally don't carry anything to keep that fish in. And so I'm okay. If you're a repeat customer and you're going to catch and you want to keep a fish, we'll keep one redfish, but we need to plan ahead on who's bringing the cooler to keep that fish in. But first time customers, we catch and release everything. When I'm fishing by myself, I catch and release everything. And when I'm out with a buddy, you know, Chris, usually we catch and release, you know, 95% of what we catch. Every now and then Chris will take a redfish home. But yeah, I'm just trying to, and here's why. It seems like the redfish population is doing okay, and it is doing okay. It's not as good as it used to be. There's just a lot of traffic back there, and there's a lot of people chasing after them. And so it's not just about how many fish are being taken out. It's about how many fish are getting hit with props and dying, and how much pressure is on their environment overall, because it changes their behavior. It changes the areas that they go, the things they do. And so it's an overall effort to preserve their overall, you know, success in these back marsh areas where we like to hunt them. So that's the gig on that. We did okay. I think we caught 5-6 fish, something like that. And then the next day, I had my good buddy Ray and his wife Valerie out, and they are the sweetest people. Ray is just, you know, no one has ever met Ray and not liked him, at least not in the time I've known him. He's a really nice guy. His wife was a joy to have on the boat. It was her birthday weekend. We get out, and the plan was to hang out in the areas close by the areas where I saw schooling fish and hope that we were going to get a shot, because I really, really wanted to put Valerie on a school and have her catch a fish. So we're milling around, and Ray hooks a 28 and a quarter ish inch redfish, probably 20 feet off of the shoreline, in a little like a wide mouth creek that goes back into the back of this marsh. And that was awesome. Got a great picture of them with that fish. And so all those fish, they start feeding in the morning, and they start milling around, and they start sucking these shrimp off the bottom. These shrimp are like clawed into the bottom of the mud right now. And so they're wandering around, and then they're sucking them off the bottom. And pretty soon they run into a buddy, And then they run into another buddy. And then they all have kind of decided, like, all right, let's get together. And they're going to go like one giant vacuum cleaner, and they're going to go suck all these shrimp off the bottom of the marsh floor. And right now, typically, it happens around the same time every morning. It has a lot to do with the tide and your water level and all that good stuff. And so you can kind of predict it right now. And when they're done sucking all the shrimp out of that area, in a week or two, they're going to move to another spot. But it's not always just because they've eaten all the shrimp out of that area. It would be really difficult to eat all of the shrimp out of an area, any area. What is happening is right now we have a lot of baby shrimp that have just hatched out again. It's like our second good hatch of shrimp. Those shrimp are going to get bigger and bigger, and they're going to get, it's going to get really good towards the end of this month and the beginning of June. They're going to be schooling like they're doing now, but it's going to be on these shrimp that just hatched. And if we get really lucky, they'll hatch again, and it'll send us into a summer pattern that's full of schools. That's what happened last year. I don't know that it's going to happen this year or not, but that was the hope. So we get a fish in the boat, cool, and Ray, with his patience, has decided the next fish is Valerie's. Whether she gets one or not, he just basically was like, I'm not going to take the shot. They're all Valerie's. I thought, man, that takes a lot of discipline and selflessness, because myself included, and a lot of my fishing buddies, like, if you miss a school or a fish like three times in a row, like, I'm sniping you. I'm coming in on you, dude. Like, you had your three chances. Like, I'm, that's it. I know where it needs to be. I'm going to put it there. And so we get out chasing this school, and the wind is blowing 15 to 18 at this time. We get up on some schools, but, you know, Valerie's a live bait angler. She's not used to this whole needing to put the lure right where, you know, right where it has to be in this 12-inch circle to catch these fish. Because you can't just throw in front of the school. These fish are head down, tail up. They're sucking shrimp off the bottom. They're not looking out in front of themselves. They'll run straight into the boat, which we had happen later on in the day. But so she's doing her best, and the wind's blowing, and I'm trying to tell her what to do, and Ray's trying to tell her what to do, and we're all coaching Valerie because we all want her to catch a fish so bad. And not just any fish, but, like, I want her to pick one off of one of these schools. Well, it's harder than it looks. And so the first several attempts, we chased one school and had several shots at it, and then they broke up into two schools, and we chased one end of them and got several shots there and just couldn't make it work. We pick up and we move. The weather was not looking good. My goal was to move out of the weather, let it pass, and then we could move back in. So that's what we did. And we got out to our next spot, and the wind picked up even more. It's blowing 20 plus miles an hour now. We had a school in front of us, and the school is moving towards me, and I'm moving towards the school. And I have the wind at my back, and it's a 20-plus mile-an-hour wind. And I'm trying to drag the power pole just a hair, and I'm trying to just, you know, navigate as best I can to slow this process down a little bit so that she gets a good shot. And I had been trying to coach, like, trying to use, you know, your clock references off of the bow, or trying to just say, hey, you know, look at that seagull that just dipped down, throw it, you know, 2 feet in front of that seagull kind of thing. And none of that was working. And I thought maybe it was, some of it was my approach. And so I said, you know, let's not get too specific. Like, I just said, throw at that seagull, thinking that if she hits anywhere close to that seagull, she's got a chance. Well, she throws out. I see her bait hit the water, and she instantly sets the hook. And I'm more excited than she is. I mean, I'm like, yes, this is what I've been waiting on all morning. Well, turns out it was a seagull that she hooked. That seagull I told her to throw at, she threw at it and hooked it. And so we played Wrestle the Seagull on the bow of the boat. It's one of my favorite games to play. You throw the towel over their head and it's not that big a deal. But as soon as that towel comes off their head, they're mad. Nap time's over. And so, you know, got that seagull untangled and it flew off unharmed. And I said, you know, we're just going to wait a little bit. That school is going to fire up. And sure enough, it did. So I threw the trolling motor down. Thank God for trolling motor in the spring. I threw the trolling motor down. I had the trolling motor on 10 facing into the wind. I was going 2.5 miles an hour, which if you know, like that trolling motor on 10 should be going 6 miles an hour. So the school has started up again. And we're going around. I'm trolling through this little cut. We're about to get on him. And I see my buddy, Mark Stout, and he's coming up the back way. And I know exactly what he's doing. The wind is so bad and it's so choppy to go the long way around that they're cutting the back way through the marsh to get out to where they're going, which is exactly what I did when I left because the wind was horrible. But as timing would have it, he comes up, you know, about 70, 80 yards to the what was my right side of the school. And I think the wake freaked them out and they quit doing their thing, but he couldn't have helped it. There was no other way to go, you know? So I don't fault him for that. It happens sometimes. But, I thought when that school was over and they didn't fire back up, I'm like, that's it. It's over. And I was thinking about calling the trip, but they still seemed down for the cause. And I was like, well, as long as they want to fish, we're going to give it our best shot. So we got absolutely beat up going across even the marsh to get back to where we're going to fish. And then we cut out into the bay and it was just brutal. I'll tell you what, Valerie is tougher than all of y'all's wives. Because Valerie did not complain for a second. She got soaked with spray from the waves. She got beat up on a very bumpy ride. And we stopped and she's ready to fish again. She had a fish on in this creek. Had a fish on and lost him at the last second. And or she had it on for 2 or 3 seconds and then lost it. And then as we're packing up to leave, I'm rolling out. There's a school of redfish that fired up. It's noon. I'm like, man, I thought the action was over. Just goes to show, like, you just never know. Big school of big fish. Ray and I got a look at a couple of fish as they approached the boat. They were big. We didn't get a good, we got good looks, but we just couldn't get a good shot on that school. And so Valerie ended the day without hooking a redfish out of one of those schools, and my heart was broken over the whole thing. I really, really, really wanted her to get one. But her attitude was great. She was everything you'd want. She was patient. She understood that this was not just throwing a live shrimp out with a cork. Like it takes some skill and patience to pull this off. And I know that the next time she's out, we're going to make it happen. So that was that. Good trip. I wanted to talk about what those fish are doing, you know, both before and after. So before they're schooling, like I said, they're milling about, sucking shrimp off the bottom, and they're in areas where the shrimp are plentiful. And those shrimp are not moving a ton right now. So if you find a school in one area, they're going to be within 200 or 300 yards of that area, 500 yards of that area for the next 2 weeks. And sometimes they'll be broken off into smaller schools, there'll be one big school. You have to take care of those schools. You don't want to beat them up. You want to stop running through areas where you know they're going to be. So like if I recognize that, oh, I've got a school or several schools that are banked up over here on this one side of the marsh, And I won't run through their area. I will avoid it at all cost. I'll go around. I'll shut down and pull shorelines because those fish are tied to structure. I know I've said it before, but I'll say it again. They tie themselves to structure when they're not feeding. So if the bite is not on and the schools are not fired up, you have two choices. You have fish that are going to tie themselves to shorelines, prop scars, points, little grassy islands, little pockets, and they're going to sit down and they're not interested in much of nothing. They're digesting, sleeping, whatever. The fish that are feeding but are not schooling are usually working themselves toward the schooling activity, and they're going to be more out in the middle this time of year. A feeding fish is usually not hugging the shoreline, but if the area is small enough and the shrimp are, especially with these high tides, the shrimp can get up closer to the shore, you may find some fish. But don't be afraid to fish away from the bank this time of year. Those fish are going to fire up in schools, and they're going to be out in the middle of these back lakes. And one of the things that can really kill a trip is fishing a ton of dead water. So if there are three or four schools in one particular area, and let's say there's 20 to 30 fish in each school. All right, so let's say that's 120 fish, 150 max. That's your population of redfish in that area. Are there redfish in other areas? Yes. But they're not as plentiful as they will be in the areas where they're schooling. So this time of year, and it happens again in the fall, you can cover a lot of dead water because the fish are grouped up, and they're grouped up where the shrimp are, and not just where any shrimp are, where the eating size shrimp are, and not dinner plate size. Eating size for a redfish, which is around that inch mark, 3/4 of an inch, you know, 1/2 inch even. But if you get any smaller than the 1/2 inch, they usually don't mess with them. So if you're looking for teeny, teeny, tiny baby shrimp that are going to be good here in a couple, 2 or 3 weeks, guess what? They're probably close to the size that are eating, that are good eating size now, but not always. Sometimes there's a delay. Sometimes there's a shift in the wind or tide that pushes those shrimp somewhere else. And you need to be on the lookout for those areas so that you know what's going to be good in the next couple of weeks. One of the ways to tell if you have little bitty baby shrimp is if you have a rush of little raindrops. Like if you took your water hose and put it on the shower feature and just skimmed it, misted it across the water, and you had a million little tiny specks of raindrops that were tiny. That's what the baby shrimp will look like right now. The bigger shrimp, you got to see them leap. You got to see something chase them. You got to see them hop out of the water. They'll hop 2 or 3 inches and fall back in the water. Those are the areas. If you're not fishing those areas, then you're not going to do well. You're going to fish a ton of dead water. You're going to wonder why you didn't see anything or get any hits. It's like, it's not everywhere right now. And if you don't see what you need to see, it's time to pick up and move, because you have a window in the morning from 6:30 in the morning to about 10:30 where 90% of your schooling action is going to happen right now. So if it's not happening within the eyesight of your boat, pick up and go somewhere, or look for the signs to see if maybe it's going to kick off. Sometimes it won't kick off till 8:30, but you need to be able to cover enough water to be able to look at all the areas and know where it's going to happen. It's time on the water. It's utilizing your time on the water as best you can. And so when you do that enough, you go, all right, that's why guys that have their own boats that even fish some of the same areas as me will still book a trip, because they haven't been fishing in a month. Well, if you put me out there, and I haven't been on the water in a month, I'm going to struggle too. Now, I have that foundation that goes, all right, I know that it's early May. I know that there's shrimp hatching. I know there's probably, you know, eating size shrimp out there. I should be finding schools. I'm going to go hunt areas that show me all those clues, right? But it takes some roaming around and figuring it out to be able to be successful, because you can end up fishing a lot of dead water. There's a lot of dead water in the spring and in the fall, and the high tides make it so that you can get to all of it. So if you're not paying attention to the ecosystem, you can draw a blank pretty easily and just wonder, you know, like, man, what happened? I thought it was on and I went out there and I struck out. Well, it's because you were not fishing an area with the right size shrimp, or any shrimp for that matter. So pay attention to that. That's going to make a big difference in your outings. Look for the baby shrimp. Know that that's coming in a couple of weeks. It's going to fire things up. But usually in those areas, you're going to find eating size shrimp and redfish. You're going to find stingrays. And unfortunately, you're probably going to find some mullet. So that's the game. That's the game on that deal. Our Bible tidbit for this week is on patience and waiting and the timing of God. So God's plan, he's not in a big hurry. He's not as impatient as we are. When someone says, hey, I'm going to take you fishing, we expect it to happen in like the next few days, right? God's plan oftentimes involves a degree of waiting past what we would want. Here are a few examples from Scripture. King David. King David. Before he was king, when God anointed him as king, you know, David gets selected to be king by God, and Samuel, you know, anoints him. And then years pass before David takes the throne. I'm not sure exactly how many years, but I know it was years, plural, before he actually took the throne. It would be like someone saying, hey, you got the job. You start in 7 years. That's weird, right? That's how God works oftentimes. God promised the Israelites that he was going to lead them out of captivity, out of Egypt, into the promised land. They wandered in the desert for 40 years. Now, much of that wandering was because of their own sin. But still, they wandered in the desert for 40 years before God gave them the promised land. You have lots of scriptures foretelling the arrival of Christ as the Messiah. They're all in Isaiah. They're all over the Old Testament. Hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of years go by before that is fulfilled. Jesus says that he will return soon. That has yet to happen, and it's been over 2,000 years since his death and resurrection. So God takes a long time to do things, and it's all on purpose. It's all part of his plan. It's all part of our growth in him and in him making us who we want to be. So chill out. Have a little patience. The woman who was healed by Jesus when she touched his cloak had been dealing with a bleeding ailment for like 18 years. That's a long time. The guy by the pool, Jesus walks up and says, the pool of Bethsaida, Jesus walks up and says, do you want to be healed? And the guy says, well, yeah, but every time the water stir, and there's no one here to put me in the pool. And Jesus, like, didn't ask you all that. Just want to know if you want to be well. And he heals the guy. The guy had been an invalid his whole life. And he'd been sitting by those pool, that pool for years waiting to be healed. So I'm saying all that, and I'm preaching to myself more than anyone. Be patient. Wait. God has a plan. He's not forgotten you. He's not left you. And God is not always going to make everything right. God does not heal everyone. God does not spare everyone. He has already forgiven us of our sin and saved us from his wrath of hell for eternity. So he didn't owe us that. So we need to check ourselves and go, look, there are times in Scripture where someone needed rescuing, someone needed healing, and God chose, for whatever reason, to not do that. There was a fellow by the name of Jesus Christ who died on the cross. So if God didn't spare his own son from the suffering on the cross, we can't expect him to spare us from all of our ailments or sufferings, because just as God had a plan, a redemptive plan in Christ being on the cross, he has a plan for us and our sufferings, and it is a redemptive plan. So that's our Bible tidbit for the week. Next week, listen up. I'm spreading the word. Be ready. Next week, we are going to do a Caden giveaway. We're going to give away a hat and a bag or two of lures. And the way to win is on next week's podcast. I am going to say one word three times. It will be a random word. If you pick up on what the word is and you post that word on Instagram or Facebook and tag me, well, tag the Empty Stringers podcast and Caden Lures, you will be the winner. The first one to do that will be the winner. So I almost did it this week, but I thought, you know, I better announce it so that you guys know what's coming. I hope you guys get out on the water and have a great weekend. Friday's going to be a little breezy, but still looks relatively fishable. Thursday's looking decent. Saturday's looking decent. It's all about the tide. The tide's going to be moving a little bit slower, and that will change a little bit. Might not want to go as far back, or you might want to find choke points and fish back lakes that have strong choke points at the front of them, and that's how you're going to find fish. You guys have a wonderful week, and go throw one of Kevin's custom painted lures. Why throw ordinary? Kevin's Outdoors. Kevin's Outside. That's what it is. You can follow him on YouTube. Diamond G Custom Baits. Go pick those up at Fish Sticks along with Kevin's Baits. There are other places. There's actually another place, and I know Anglers Anonymous carries Kevin's Baits. And there's another place that he told me about. I can't remember right now, but I will remember and tell you next week. Go listen to the Salty Yak and the Bear Grease and the Bite Me and all those great podcasts. And be safe out there on the water. We'll talk to you guys next week.